Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Love Strategy. I'm Nina Atwood, and my purpose is to take you on an inspiring journey of self-discovery and relationship recovery. I'm the host of the show, but this is really all about you, and it's for you, the single woman who wants to date smart and find the love of her life. On this show, casual sex is dumb, being choosy is smart, and the prize is a great marriage for life. So please listen, call in, and share your dating and relationship stories. Ask the questions that keep you awake at night and get coaching. The number to call in is 347-308-8511. That's 347-308-8511. Now, stay tuned for Love Strategy.
Hello, it's Love Strategies. This is Nina Atwood, your host, live this time. And if you're joining us for the first time, welcome to the show. I have a very special show tonight. Our theme is relationship rehab.
Wanna make a change for once in my life. Gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right.
That's right, the man in the mirror, or in this case, the woman in the mirror, that's me. And if you're a man, it's the man in the mirror. If you're a woman, it's a woman in the mirror. But tonight is about relationship rehab. If you are over the age of 21, I would say the odds are pretty good that you have been in love at least one time. And if you have been in love at least once, then the odds are you have ended a significant relationship at least one time, unless you are happily married now. And if you're listening to this show, you're probably not a happily married person, unless you're one of my friends, in which case, hello, everybody. But most of the people who listen to this show are not currently in a happy, long-term, monogamous relationship. Usually you're seeking that. But if you have been in love before, and if you have ended relationships before, then you are in relationship rehab. That's when it's time to look at the person in the mirror. You know, I had to go through relationship rehab myself at a very critical point in my life, quite a number of years ago. And what led to it was, for many years, I went from one bad relationship to the next, and I never really stopped long enough to evaluate why it was that I could not seem to get out of that pattern. So every time I got into a new relationship, I thought that I was really getting into something that was going to turn out well. Obviously, you don't start relationships thinking they're going to turn out bad. Not in your rational self. And in my rational self, I believed that I was starting something that was going to be good. But then, years later, would realize that it wasn't good for me. Now, did I have intuitions up front that those relationships might not turn out well for me? Yes, I did. Looking back with hindsight, I can see that there were signs and there were signals that those relationships were not going to go well for me. But for the most part, I chose to ignore those signals and I went ahead. And when things, of course, inevitably did not work out, then I would find myself looking back and saying, well, you know, why did I do that? Why did I go down that pathway? But inevitably, I found myself very quickly drawn to someone new and starting a new relationship. So I was the classic serial monogamist, one after the other, not really ever stopping to evaluate what was, you know, I realized at one point that my chooser was broken, my picker was broken, but I really hadn't evaluated why that was happening. And the turning point for me was, it was very close to the end of a 3.5-year relationship with someone that I had been with and for 3.5 years and that I loved very deeply, but who was not good for me. And we were incompatible on so many levels that trying to have a life together was just painful. It was like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, and it was painful for me. It was painful for him. The things I valued in life and in a relationship were mostly not the things that he valued, and vice versa. So our time together was just an endless, painful exercise in trying to get our needs met, and both of us very frustrated to the point of exhaustion. It was a relationship roller coaster. A lot of drama, just a lot of pain for both of us. So, you know, and the other thing was that I think that he had some character issues that in my opinion made him unsuitable for long-term relationships, period. So it wasn't just about us being incompatible. I think there were some other even deeper issues than that, but long story short, after 3.5 years of this roller coaster relationship, I found myself sitting in a doctor's office one day. I had been ill with it's hard to even explain what I was ill with. I just had a lot of chronic fatigue and exhaustion and kept having minor illnesses over and over again. So I was sitting in this doctor's office, having a conversation about why I was so run down and why I was struggling so much just to get back to normal health, normal levels of energy. So this doctor asked me, it was kind of off of what we were talking about, but he suddenly got rather serious and just kind of gently asked me how my relationship was going. And I burst into tears, and I didn't really share much. I didn't give any details about the relationship, but the little bit that I shared, I think, was enough to give him a picture. So he said to me, you know, he said, I rarely ask people this kind of a question. I typically stay very focused on the physical health, but he said, I felt compelled to ask you because there were so many signs that there's something else going on. And then he said to me, this is going to sound very dramatic, and I don't mean it that way, but I'm having such a strong intuition about it that I feel compelled to tell you this. And I said, well, what is it? And he said, I don't think you're going to be able to get well until you get out of this relationship, because my sense is that being in this relationship is really doing something to you on a very deep level that is manifesting as physical health problems, but it's really your heart and your spirit that are being harmed. So that was a huge wake-up call for me, and I had to go away and reflect about that a lot. It was actually quite shocking to hear a doctor say something like that to me. And, you know, this wasn't like sitting in front of a therapist or something. This was a doctor, and it was about my physical health. But he rightly identified and saw that my physical health problems were deeply connected to my emotional health issues. So that was a wake-up call. And at that point, I had a choice to make. I didn't realize at that moment. I did, after a lot of soul-searching and reflection over the days and weeks after this doctor said this to me. And then I think that finally came to the point of a realization. And the realization was that I had a choice to make, and I had two choices. One was to remain attached to someone who wasn't good for me, although I loved him a lot, and I think in his own way he loved me, or to choose me, my health, my well-being, my ability to express myself in life and to be joyful in life, to have emotional freedom in life, me, my health and well-being. That was, so it was one of those two choices. And it was you might think, well, that should be an automatic easy choice. But for me, it was not an easy choice because I really did love this person an awful lot. And but I ultimately chose myself. And it was the first time in my life that I chose me. Now, yes, I had moved on from relationships in the past that were not good for me. I had succeeded in doing that, but that was always because he was the one who left. So, I had been the one who was left, and then I had to deal with the pain of that, and then the pain of moving on and so forth, and I had done that. But I had never before been the one to choose to end a relationship that I was someone that I was deeply attached to while it was still ongoing, and to choose myself because I could clearly see that it was not a good relationship for me. I'd never done that before, and it was very difficult. But when I made that choice, it truly empowered me in a way that I don't have words to describe. It was truly the beginning of a huge turning point in my life in a far, far more wonderful and positive direction. And so making that choice was one thing, and then working through it, the relationship rehab part of it, took a lot of time. It was about a year-long process, and I spent a lot of time that year in self-reflection and spiritual study, and just really the best way I know how to describe it is relationship rehab. That was my very first time in my life to really focus on the woman in the mirror and come to terms with the fact that I was the common denominator in all of my relationship problems and failures. And so, and that's, you know, that's not easy to face, but it was so necessary to my recovery and moving forward in a different way. And during that year, I dated someone new off and on, but he was very long distance. So, and that relationship really didn't have much chance of making it. And I kind of knew that. But but there were some really, really nice things about that relationship. And it kind of worked itself out. But the vast majority of my time, because that was so long distance, I couldn't just completely wrap myself around a man. I had a lot of time to focus on me and a lot of time to focus on emotional and spiritual growth. And the best word I can think of for that process or the end result of it was that it was like an epiphany. It was truly a mental, emotional, and spiritual awakening. And for me, the results were profound. I discovered something about myself that year. I discovered that I did not have a strong inner compass to guide my decisions and my actions and my path of life. That I had an inner compass. I had an idea of, I definitely had a part of me that knew what was good for me and what was bad for me and what was right and what was wrong. It wasn't like I lacked all that. It was that it wasn't strong enough. It wasn't rock solid. So every time I met a new man that I began to fall in love with and he with me and start this relationship, if being in that relationship went against some of the things in my inner compass, in other words, if I was getting warning bells that this wasn't going to really be the best thing for me, then I had a way of, you know, not that I was sitting there thinking about this and doing it consciously. This is this is what was always going on in the background, and that year of self-reflection showed me that what I had done in the past was turn down the volume. So for my own inner compass, I turned down the volume so that it would not talk to me so loudly, and so that I could go ahead and continue the attachment or whatever the relationship was that I was in. And so that realization that I was turning away from my own inner voice that was trying to tell me things, it was the wisdom and the I think of it as not just my individual human wisdom, but I think there's a spiritual wisdom that is going on there. I think God gives all of us an inner compass, but we don't always listen to it, and I stopped listening to mine. And that was really the source of the pain that I experienced in my life with various relationships that didn't work out. The worst thing that happened was not what he did or didn't do. You know, maybe he failed to give me the kind of love and commitment that I was really seeking, or maybe he cheated on me, or maybe he whatever, you know, fill in the blank. And those things were painful, but they were nothing compared to the damage that I did to myself by turning away from myself. So that was my great learning. And out of that, I began to strengthen my inner compass by listening to my own deep down voice, the part of me that reflected my spiritual journey through life, the part that is concerned with those aspects of my life that are in my highest and greatest good, and in the highest and greatest good of the lives that I touch. And once I began to strengthen that part, a lot of other questions were answered. A lot of other things then made sense to me that had not made sense to me previously. And that really became my personal mantra. So that, you know, it wasn't like life was perfect after that. There were always new situations to have to confront and to have to figure out how to work through. But as I did, what I learned to do, out of strengthening my inner compass, I then learned how to listen to that part of myself. And I would actually say to myself, you know, whatever happens in this relationship is whatever happens. He's going to do what he's going to do. He's going to love me or he will not. He'll be committed or he will not. We're going to walk through life together or we're not. Over those things, I have no choice. But what I do have choice over is my own thoughts and choices and behaviors and the feelings that flow out of those things. And then I dedicated myself to discovering what was in my highest and greatest good and that of the person that I was considering dating. And then out of that, I always got clarity, just amazing amounts of clarity. I developed a strong no, being able to say no to men and situations and relationships that I could see were not good. A lot of things lined up for me after that. And so really my relationship rehab was about making an ironclad commitment to my own spiritual and physical and mental and emotional well-being, and that would be primary over any relationship for the rest of my life. And I'm so utterly and completely clear about that, that that is really the only way that it can possibly work for me. So that was my relationship rehab. What is yours? What are you recovering from? What are you working through in your life? I'm wondering if you are reflecting on your own situation, and if you are wondering, well, you know, what do I need to be in relationship rehab about in my life? It's a powerful question, you know. Sometimes just asking good questions helps you begin to realize things that you did not realize before. It helps you go down pathways that you've not been down before. So the question of what is it that your relationship rehab needs to be about? If you're listening to this show, like I said, odds are good you are not right now in a fantastically great relationship. If you were, you're probably not searching for answers on a show called Love Strategies. Either things are not going well in the relationship that you are currently engaged in, or you are not in a relationship. Either way, here's the question. If you're looking back over your history and you see that you have this pattern of attracting people who are not necessarily good for you, or this pattern of some sort of a relationship dynamic that just seems to happen over and over again. You know, the names change, but the story remains the same. And if you're seeing that, looking back on your life experience, then maybe that is trying to tell you something. Maybe your history is saying that it's time for you to take a step back and really take this period of your life seriously. You know, most people, after they break up with someone or get a divorce, most people do not take the time to really honor this. You know, it's kind of a life stage. I look at it as a life stage. You call it relationship rehab or whatever you want to call it, but it is that stage of life after a significant relationship ends. And I'm not talking about, you know, if you were married for 35 years and you had a wonderful marriage and your spouse passed away from cancer, then you probably don't need relationship rehab. You just need time to grieve. That's what you need. You need to recover from the loss of a fabulous, wonderful mate, and that your heart is just grieving and yearning for that person that you loved so dearly. And if that is the stage of life, if that is where you are, if that is the kind of a relationship ending that you had, then I would say you need to take the time to honor that grief and mourn the loss of that person that you loved so dearly. But you probably don't need relationship rehab, because it's not like you have some sort of a pattern of choosing the wrong people that you're going to have to figure out. Relationship rehab is for people who have a pattern of choosing the wrong relationships, choosing the wrong people over and over again, and can see that you can see that there is something in the way you're making your choices that's not working. That's what I had to go through. And if that is you, then if you're like most people, and if you're like me back when I was doing those things, then the temptation is to jump right back into the dating scene, or to maybe you have a friend. You know, friends don't necessarily understand the need for this stage or understand the need for going through this process. So friends often will push people at you almost as, you know, before the ink is dry on your divorce decree, or just as soon as possible after a breakup. So friends often say, well, let me introduce you to this person, and so on. And so the next thing you know is that you're right back into the scene, right back into dating someone, and you've skipped over this vital stage of relationship rehab. And so next thing you know, you're attached to this new person. You've done no self-reflection. You really haven't reset your inner compass or strengthened it. And so now you're attached. You've probably hopped into bed with them, and you've started this new whirlwind romance or hot and heavy romance. But the problem is that as soon as you start something new, your lessons from the past are no longer apparent to you, if they ever were. Why is that? Well, here's why. Because when you're in a relationship, you're attached to the person and to the idea of making that one work. That's how attachment works. We don't want to let go. That's what happens. So if you choose someone new very quickly without doing your homework, without doing your relationship rehab, without assessing that person's character or compatibility, making sure your inner compass is very strong so that you can say no if that person isn't right for you. If you've done all that, well, here you are. You will find yourself attached to the wrong person again. And when that happens, it sets off a whole new chain reaction of rationalizing and justifying, trying to convince yourself that this relationship somehow is going to work out. Somehow it's all going to come together and be great, even though that little voice inside of you, just like the voice I had inside of me that was telling me something was not right here, but you're not listening to it. And so however long that plays out, weeks, months, maybe years again, but eventually it does break down, and then you have another divorce or breakup. And that is how people get into repeated patterns of choosing unwisely over and over again. So, and if you want to change that pattern, it requires time to reflect without the influence of some attractive person in your orbit. Without that person there, then you can truly self-reflect. And then you have the opportunity to come face-to-face with the most important person in your life. And that is you, the man or woman in the mirror. You are the common denominator in all your life dramas, all of your relationship struggles. It's you. So almost always when people reach out to me for advice about relationships in which they are struggling, the core of the issue is almost always that the person I am talking to is coming from a place of emotional emptiness or spiritual emptiness, neediness. And how do you know? Here's how you know if you're coming from that place. Here's the big test for that. It's very simple. Are you willing to release this person that you are attached to if that person's presence in your life is not in your highest and greatest good? Are you willing? If your answer is yes, then you're halfway there. You can now go to work on the issues in the relationship, knowing that you'll be able to release that person if you cannot influence or impact things in a different direction. But if you cannot authentically say, yes, I'm willing to release this person if they're not right for me, then that is where you must begin. You have to get back to filling your own well and changing your inner compass. Because here's what I truly believe, and that is that the answers to whatever it is that you are struggling about in this relationship with this person, whatever's keeping you up at night, the answers to that lie within you. You already know what you need, and you already know whether or not the person you are with can get on the same page with you in life. And I firmly believe that you already know that. Now, I'm not talking about having that person satisfy your every emotional need or your neediness. That is not reasonable or possible. I'm talking about that person being on the same page with you with regard to the fundamentals of a relationship, meaning you love one another equally and you're equally invested in exploring the possibility of marriage and a life together. You share the same basic values in life. There are no non-negotiables that stand in the way, and you treat each other with love and respect. And if you have those things lined up, then you have a pretty good shot at a long-term relationship. But if you don't have those lined up, then I would be willing to say you probably have something going off in your inner compass trying to tell you that those things are not lined up, but you can't hear it because of being too wildly attached to someone. So that is what the essential dilemma is whenever people come to me and they're struggling over a problem in a relationship with someone. And I'm not talking about having a problem with someone that you were married to happily for 10 years and now something's gone off course. That's a different set of issues. I'm talking about someone that you are dating in a long-term relationship with and you're struggling about it. Those are usually the issues that are at the core of it. And the first place to begin is to really strengthen your inner compass. Let's take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment after this message.
Hi, I'm Nina Atwood. Does this sound familiar to you? You start a new relationship full of hope that maybe this time he's the one. But weeks, months, or even years later, you realize that although the name and face have changed, the story is the same. He's all wrong for you, and now you have to continue suffering or start all over. Well, you don't have to keep repeating the same old patterns. If you want to raise your relationship game and put yourself on a whole new course for a happy, healthy, lasting love, get Temptations of the Single Girl, the 10 Dating Traps You Must Avoid. This is a self-help book like no other. It's a parable, an easy, fast story you can read in 2 to 3 hours. The fact that it's a story and not just dry, boring data means you'll retain the lessons learned far longer. And the more you retain, the greater the changes you'll be able to make in your life. That's why I wrote it this way, to make it easy for you to get what you need to permanently alter your love life for the better. You can get the book by clicking on the book cover right from the show page, or you can go to singlescoach.com, find the tab for books and tapes, then click on Singles Coach A Store. Temptations of the Single Girl is available through Amazon.com and as a Kindle book. And now back to more love strategies.
We're back with more love strategies. I'm Nina Atwood. Our theme tonight is relationship rehab. What are you recovering from? The lines are open and we're taking calls. If you want to call in, help and so that I can help you clarify your situation and move forward more powerfully. Not everyone wants to get on the air. Sometimes I have people write their questions, and I have one right now. So Susie has this question. She says, I've been on 4 wonderful dates, and I feel like this could be the beginning of a wonderful thing. How do I know when it's okay to get physical? I don't want to move too fast, but I would love to take that step. And she goes on to say, after these wonderful first few dates, the latest date seemed to have ended, unlike the others, in that actually this was a 2-part question, and she sent me the first part, and then a few days later got the second part. So there was a gap in between these two phases here. And so she said that somehow the last date seemed to have ended unlike the others and that he has bailed out of plans. She says he still texts and still puts sweetie in the opening, but I'm not sure. This morning I asked him to see if we're still on for today, and he said he has a cold. I replied with, I hope you get better soon, and by the way, if there's something I need to know, please tell me. I'm not sure if this would have made it better, but I just wanted him to be honest. I've not heard from him, and it's only been an hour since then, but give me some insight. I'm very new to this dating world, and it's not easy, and this just seems like a lot of mind games. So there are a couple of things here, Susie, that I see. And, you know, one is whether this relationship, I'm not sure today, because you and I actually had this exchange in the past, but I'm not sure where this potential relationship stands today, but my answer is the same whether you are now hot and heavy or whether he's backed away, and here's the answer, you are moving way too fast. So imagine after those first 3 wonderful dates, what if you had decided to get physical? What if you had gone ahead and slept with this guy just on the basis of having 3 wonderful dates, not really having any idea about his character at that point, not having any of the emotional security that a real commitment might have provided, not having any idea if you were on the same page about the purpose of your dating, you would now find yourself wondering where you stood with him, but with the added intensity and potential humiliation of having slept with him. So, and when I say potential humiliation, I mean that horrible feeling of having been intimate with someone in the most, you know, emotional and spiritually intense kind of way, and then he just disappears, can feel really humiliating to a woman. So having a handful of dream dates does not equal a great relationship. Anybody can be fabulous for a few hours. You know, anybody can go on 3 dates and show up and be charming and hang on your every word. I'm not sure how much alcohol was involved in those 3 dates, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if there was quite a bit of alcohol consumption going on. Who knows? I don't know for sure. But here's the thing. It's easy to be great for a handful of dates. Anybody can do that. But not everyone. In fact, it rarely is it that you have someone who has real intentions, who steps up to the plate and offers something substantial. And it takes time to discover if that possibility exists with the person that you are dating. It takes time. There is no way that you can know after a handful of great dates that that is where you are with someone. So it's incredibly emotionally risky, more so for women than men, to jump into bed and get intimate on the basis of, you know, 3 or 4 great dates. So I have no idea if he's playing any games, but from what you've written, I can tell that he is in the mode of checking you out. And so he can be all over you 1 minute, and you'll think he is falling in love with you, but to him it could mean very little. That's because the primary driver for men is sex, while your primary driver is love. Doesn't mean that men don't want love, and it doesn't mean women don't want sex. We both want both. But initially, up front, the main driver for men is sex. Initially, up front, the main driver for women is love. It's just kind of an evolutionary conundrum that we are at odds between the two genders in the very beginning of new relationships. And difference in how we approach in the beginning puts us at odds until we learn how to sidestep the temptation to get sexual too soon. So men and women can get on the same page, and they do when they are able to pace a relationship, develop the friendship side first, discover mutual values and life goals, and then build a bridge between their hearts. And so when you do that, then it's funny, but if you can kind of imagine that you're both starting on opposite sides of the river and you build this bridge toward one another, and now you go off in the same direction together. That's what happens when you're able to pace a relationship. That's what happens when you have a strong inner compass that tells you, I don't know enough yet. I just barely know this person, and I need to put myself first and take my time discovering what the real potential of this relationship is. That's what your inner compass is there for. So getting strong within yourself, developing clarity around your true desire for a loving and committed relationship that moves toward marriage, changing your mindset from when is it time to get physical to is this the right person for me to love and be loved by? Getting physical is way down the road from that, many weeks and even months later. Only when you are clear as a couple that you are pursuing marriage as your goal and that you love one another are you ready for sex. All right, I have another questioner from another listener. Now, here's what Deanna writes to me. She says, "Dear Nina, I read your books and I love them. However, I found myself very startled when I read the term westbound train because I realize I think I am one. I mostly relate to the I love you but syndrome. In all my relationships, I've never wanted to fully commit, thinking there might be better. I have a tendency to not be fully satisfied with the person. I only find them attractive conditionally, so if they wear their hair a certain way or wear certain clothes or do certain things, and eventually I break up with them because I feel like I can do better or I'm just not attracted to them anymore. So I think I'm always looking for the next best thing. I want to find someone who I will always be excited by and find attractive, but how do I know if this is a problem I have or if I just haven't found the right person yet? And if I've been settling in the meantime for my less than ideal, which inevitably leads me to me critiquing them and not being satisfied with them." Well, Deanna, you definitely have an issue, and it is definitely your problem. In all of my life issues, I am the common denominator. So you have to start there. The same is true in this situation as it is in every situation, especially when you see that this is a pattern. It's not like this has just happened once with one guy. This happens with almost everyone you date. So you're the common denominator, and the first step is to take ownership of that issue and to take responsibility for making choices that have led you down that road. And one of the things that I think might be a clue about how you're getting so far down that road, let's zero in on the first three dates, because that's when you are setting the stage for everything that is going to occur in that relationship on those first three dates. So let's look at that. So what is the purpose of the first three dates? It's to decide whether or not it's worth checking out further. It's whether or not a relationship is even possible with this person. I don't mean, it's not about figuring out if you're going to be in love with them and spend the rest of your life with them. You can't determine that in the first three dates. It is just looking to see, is there a potential here? And not just a connection for, you know, mutual gratification through companionship or sex or, you know, preventing loneliness or something like that, but rather, is this something that has the potential to be a good, loving relationship? And so with that kind of a purpose, if you recognize that's what your first three dates are about, and if you are clear about what you are looking for, then you are positioned to make a wise choice. So there's two main things that you should be looking at in your first three dates. And the first one is, do we share common values and life paths? And the second one is there chemistry between us? Now, I see a lot of people struggle over the issue of sharing common values and life paths. Chemistry, they have it in buckets. They attract people that they're very attracted to. It's mutual. They're all hot and bothered for each other, but they don't really spend any time on the common values and life paths. It's more rare, but I do occasionally see people who have the pattern of, you know, the values and so on are pretty well matched, but there's no chemistry. And with you, Deanna, it's the chemistry part that is lacking. And here's what I know. I know that when two people feel a genuine attraction, if they're intellectually, emotionally, physically, and so on, with things, you know, attracted to one another, then issues like hair and clothing are not important. Another way to look at it is this. When we're attracted to the whole package, then the chemistry is good. If the chemistry is poor, on the other hand, then we have a tendency to focus on superficial things like how you part your hair and the color of shirts you wear and what condition your shoes are in or things like that. And the reason for that is very simple, because the part of the brain where chemistry is generated, the part of your brain where the attraction that eventually results in being bonded to someone, that part of your brain is not a part of the brain that has a whole lot of language. It is simply a part of you that instinctively feels this feels good or this feels bad. That's what it is. But because we do have another part of the brain that's filled with language and out of which we tend to interact with you as human beings, then we tend to take the feeling that we're having and try to put words around it. And that's where we start justifying why it is that we're in the relationship or not, or deciding to move on. So if it just doesn't feel right with someone because there's no chemistry, then what you're going to do is you're going to start filling in the gap, the language gap, with all these reasons about why you should move on. Well, I just don't like he has this funny look on his face sometimes when he's eating his food and his mouth's a little bit open, and I don't know, it's just really a big turn off to me. Or, I like the guy a whole lot, but, he drives a clunker of a car, and I've never dated a guy who drives a clunker, so I don't know if I could date someone who drives a clunker. Or, he has this funny way of talking, and sometimes his grammar isn't the best in the world, and I just can't stand that. I like someone who has really good grammar. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up here. These are actually excuses I've heard people say about why they don't want to date someone any longer. But that's what we do. If it doesn't feel right, then you create the justification in your mind. And the opposite is true. When a relationship feels right or feels good, and someone asks you, well, why do you love that person? Then you have a tendency to want to try to explain it, but it's very hard to explain. Now, in dating, when there's a lot of chemistry, but you suspect that there's some incompatibility, you had better put some good language around that one. You had better get out of your feeling self and get into your rational self if you're going to make a good choice. But getting back to you, Deanna, I think that the task for you is learning to listen to your heart and your, I can't think of a better word, your loins. When you're sitting there at dinner with a new guy and you're talking back and forth and so on, do you feel a certain warmth that kind of maybe starts in your heart, but it goes down below the tablecloth? And if so, you are experiencing chemistry. If you don't have that, Deanna, if you go out with a guy, maybe not on the first date, but if you get to the second, third, maybe fourth date, and you don't ever have that warm feeling that kind of goes to the nether regions of your body, you need to move on. It's not going to work. But I suspect something. I suspect that on a deeper level, that you're hanging out in these relationships, these subtle four relationships, because it keeps you safe. Because, if there's no chemistry, there's very little glue, and therefore far less risk of being hurt. But the thing is that if you're taking no emotional risks, you're not going to get much of a reward, Deanna. If you want to attract a really great relationship, you have to be willing to take some emotional risk, but not the over-the-top risk that women sometimes take when they hook up with an emotionally unavailable guy. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, and sometimes people who are going through what you're describing, sometimes they have that experience earlier in life, really falling madly in love with someone completely wrong for you, getting terribly burned, and then in self-defense, you swing over to the other direction, the no chemistry, settle for safe relationships. Well, someone once said, the race in life is to the middle. in order to have really good relationships, you have to be willing to take some risks. But on the other hand, you can't take crazy risks. In your case, Deanna, I would say give up being so safe. Take a few risks and you will be ready for love. So you'll never find someone who always attracts you. But and the earliest stages of a relationship can and should be very exciting. And then that naturally settles down into a deeper love. But it's got to have some of that. But what the real goal is being fully alive. And we are responsible for our own sense of aliveness on a personal level. If you're seeking life energy through a relationship, it's a mistake. The other person will eventually disappoint in some way. Bringing your full aliveness, including your sexuality as a woman, and I don't mean sexuality as in having sex, I mean your deep down awareness of your sexuality, your feelings of sexuality, bringing all of that, because that's a huge part of life, bringing all that aliveness to a relationship is the way to go. And then you can seek someone else who brings that kind of aliveness to a relationship as well. Someone who's awake and present and alive in life and passionate about life. So your relationship rehab, Deanna, is be much more willing to be open to love and give up being so terribly safe. I think that will make a very big difference for you. All right, we're going to be back with more love strategies in just a moment. All right, we're back to the show. I have one more question from a listener. And this one is from Jeff. And Jeff gave me a question, asked me this question about a year ago. And then he recently wrote me for the second time. So let me start with the year ago. So a year ago, Jeff wrote this. He said, I just began dating again after a 5.5-year period. And I found your book, Be Your Own Dating Service, at Barnes & Noble. I really love the book. That's how I found your website. And he says, I think one of my problems is I push too hard early on. And sometimes I try to stay and fix relationships after it should be clear that there's no hope. An acquaintance of mine separated from her husband in January. Her divorce just became final last week. We went out casually through January and February, and then in March she started pushing me away. I figured it might have something to do with all the turmoil of the divorce, so I backed off. And I did get very over-involved in listening to her problems and trying to help her find solutions, but I disengaged from that at the end of May, and now I'm getting mixed signals. I think getting too involved in her problem-solving was a big mistake. I realized I needed to back off and keep some distance, and I have done that. Then he says, I realized that dating a woman who just got separated was not a good idea, and I don't want to be the rebound guy or the transitional man. We have a lot in common and so on. But is backing off the right strategy? So a year ago I told him, well, the answer is yes. I said, Jeff, listen, here's a couple of things you need to think about as you reflect on your dating period. Did she show signs of being really attracted to you when you backed away? Was she dismayed by that? Because if a woman is really into you, she makes herself available. And if she's not ready, if she's not really that attracted to you, then anything will make her back off. But I'm not seeing those signs. As a general rule, if you're questioning where you stand with someone, you probably don't have a leg to stand on. Are there people who have difficulty expressing their attraction? Yeah, but for the most part, if someone is really starry-eyed about you, you know it. So that was a year ago. So recently, Jeff followed up today and he said, well, here's how it turned out. This woman made several attempts to find a new job, and she moved to another state. That didn't work, so she became immediately involved with a married guy that she worked with who had a marriage that was falling apart. He divorced his wife, and she moved in with him. Whatever she was looking for, I wasn't it, and that's a good thing. This got me thinking. Back in my early single years, I had several short 3-month relationships with women who became very quickly engaged to the next guy they dated. And he says, whatever they were looking for, I wasn't it. And that was a good thing. But here's my question. How can you determine if someone is desperately looking for an instant relationship and somebody to move in with and marry too quickly? My inclination is to get to know a woman slowly over a reasonable period of time. I don't want an instant relationship. And I don't want to waste my time and emotional energy on somebody who's a runaway train, and it's pretty obvious I'm not suspicious enough or something, because I'm probably missing danger signs I need to heed to protect myself. So here's my answer to you, Jeff, round two. I can see that you are trying to learn the lessons you need going forward, but you're still missing some pieces. One thing I've learned is that if you want better answers in life, you must ask better questions. I don't think the question you're asking is good enough. It's a mind-reading question. You know, trying to figure out what another person's drivers are puts you in the position of having to be some sort of an amateur psychologist, and even real psychologists will tell you they can't read minds. A far better question is, looking back at my past relationships, what is it that I am repeatedly drawn to that is not working for me? It's that man in the mirror question all over again, because the common denominator here is you. A couple of things that I want to suggest you look at, Jeff. Women have repeatedly dated you for a short period of time and then moved on to someone else quickly. Now, whether or not those relationships lasted or whether or not they were smart to do that, that isn't the point. The point is that you've gotten really attached to women who weren't that attached to you. And there's this pattern I'm hearing that for men, it translates to dating the wounded bird. She's going through some life drama or trauma, and you become her sounding board and comfort. The problem is that at some point, the wounded bird is going to peck you to death. The wounded birds can't really be into you. What you want is a woman who is emotionally mature and healthy, who's coming from, I have a great life, and I'm attracted to you, and I'm interested in sharing that life with you. So your relationship rehab, Jeff, is look at the man in the mirror, do some self-healing, get yourself strong and stable in your life. I don't know the rest of your life, but make sure you're strong in work, finances, health, friendship, spiritual growth, the whole ball of wax, and then you'll be attracting a whole new caliber of woman. So I hope tonight's episode of Relationship Rehab has made a difference for you. Thanks to Kate, my producer, for doing a great job screening calls and managing the chat room. And the most special acknowledgement I want to give to my loving and devoted husband, Mark. Thank you, sweetheart, for being the wind beneath my wings. Be sure and join us again next week for more love strategies. And in the meantime, send me your questions about love, life, dating, and relationships to nina@singlescoach.com. And remember, there's only one way to great relationships, and that's to live a joyful life of integrity, spirit, and purpose.
Thank you for joining us at Love Strategies. Be sure and visit the premier website for single men and women who want to date smart, singlescoach.com. Sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get notifications for this show as well as other free dating tips. If you want a coach to support you in your growth and recovery, go to Singles Coaching on the website and choose personal coaching. That's it for today, and be sure and tune back in for more love strategies so you can date smart and find the love of your life.